Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the beautiful sunny city of Los Angeles, California. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you have begun the negotiations without beginning the negotiations. That's what we're going to start with today, which is what you should be starting with. You got to position yourself, folks. Position yourselves for future negotiations. That's what Jerry Jones is doing, and that's what you need to do. What do you need to do? Hey, whether it's Thursday night football or Saturday or Sunday or Monday. I don't know if you're East Coast or you're West Coast, but it doesn't really matter. The negotiations should be underway even if they're not yet underway. Here's what I mean. Are you aware of the upcoming football schedule? Are you? How aware are you? Here's your nights if you care anything about football. And I never understand the whole, I'm an NFL guy, I don't watch college. I'm a college guy, I don't watch NFL. Like, oh, okay. I like U.S. Open tennis. But if I gave you the choice of U.S. Open tennis or college football and you're an NFL guy, which will you choose? San Diego State, Stanford on Friday night. Saturday night, ooh, now it gets good. Saturday midday, you have Tennessee, West Virginia. And Saturday night, you got Michigan, Notre Dame. Louisville, Alabama. Sunday night, Miami, LSU. Monday night, Virginia Tech, Florida State. Wow! College football knows what the F they're doing, don't they? They're like, look, we understand that some of you are going to be split coming up, right? Some of you are going to be like, I got NFL, I got NFL Thursday, I got NFL Sunday, I got NFL Monday, I got a lot of stuff to do. We need to announce our presence like Nuke LaLouche with authority. So we're going to give you Notre Dame, Michigan, Louisville, Alabama, Miami, LSU, Virginia Tech, Florida State. And here's where the negotiation should be. You don't start negotiating on Saturday morning for Saturday night with your wife.
Honey, don't worry, I got all this Saturday. Listen, at 4:30 or at 7:30, I'm going to need to check out a little bit for football.
What you need to be doing is earning up that equity. Earning up that equity.
Hun, listen, this afternoon you need to go get that haircut. You should do that. Wednesday night, it's going to be ladies' night. You should do that. You should do that. It's good. It's a good idea. You need school, getting back underway with the kids.
You're starting the process of negotiating without actually negotiation. Don't ask for anything back in return. Hey, I don't need anything back in return. You just go.
Hey, you know, Nordy's, they still have, I know their anniversary sale is done, but they still have a bunch of stuff on sale. Like, you should check that stuff out.
That way, when the negotiations actually start, Friday night, what do you get tomorrow? Yeah, listen, the ball game on 4:30, Notre Dame, Michigan. Really want to watch it. Oh, okay, well, that sounds reasonable. Listen, I got some things to do in the morning. You got to go to Home Depot and Bed Bath & Beyond. You're like, oh, that sounds good. Sounds like a good Saturday. All right, soccer game, football, ball, baseball, football, whatever you got to do. You do that Saturday. Then Saturday night, you're like, huh? I still have children and a wife? Fine. I'm watching football. That's how it works. That's what Jerry Jones is doing. That's what the owners are doing. What have we heard about the players this entire offseason and preseason? Man, we need longer. We need fully guaranteed contracts. Fully guaranteed contracts. We need more money. Got to be more money. Right. Whether it's Odell Beckham Jr. who just got more money, or Aaron Donald who's going to get more money, or Khalil Mack who we'd all assume is going to get more money. We just don't know who he's going to get that money from. Everybody wants more money. Everybody wants more guaranteed deals. More. Here's Jerry Jones on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas giving his thoughts on a potential new NFL schedule.
My solution is real simple, is cut back on preseason games, have one at each team's home, play a couple of them, and then you need to add two games to the regular season, which I've been a proponent of for several years. It's probably physically better for players than it is to have the longer preseason, the longer practicing. Our studies show that we actually have a ramped-up injury situation with players during preseason.
Yeah, our studies show that even though most of these injuries occur to guys that aren't going to make the NFL, and that most of you don't play, most of the guys that matter don't play in two preseason games, our studies show that by and large, what I told you years ago about 18-game schedule is in fact right. All this is Jerry Jones laying down the path for negotiations. He knows the NFL players want more money. He knows they want more a higher percentage of that money guaranteed. He knows the Players Association wants deeper rosters, more guys, more jobs, more money, more. I mean, listen, I got the path to more money for me. You hate those preseason games? I hate the preseason games. Hey, I've been telling you 18 games for years, but this isn't about money. It's not about me making more money. No. It's not about the owners making more money. No, he never mentioned that. He never mentioned it's not about all of us owners making more money or about increased TV deals. Nope. This is about, hey, player safety an issue? We got you. Preseason games a nuisance? We got you. Players and their emotions tell them they deserve longer guaranteed, more financially acceptable deals? We got you. This is about you. This is my solution to your problems. Players are dealing on personal emotions. Owners are businessmen. And everything in life is a negotiation, isn't it? You know, you negotiate with your wife, you negotiate with your kids. Hell, you even negotiate with somebody who you're with the parking spot. Do I jam it in really close to this parking spot to where I have to walk five floors less? Or do I go around a couple times? Negotiations, there's give and take. And players saying we want fully guaranteed contracts is never going to happen. And owners saying they want 18 games is probably never going to happen. And fans saying we don't want to pay for preseason games is never going to happen. And somewhere in the middle is where life actually exists. You give us this, we'll give you that. You want fully guaranteed contracts? Cool. How about 18 games? No, we don't want that. Okay, what if you're vested as a veteran after 3 years instead of after four, actually 5 years. We redo some of the right handwriting within the franchise player tag. Oh, okay, that's cool. We'll do that if you give us 18 games. This is just negotiation. That's all. I don't actually think it doesn't matter in terms of football, right? It doesn't. I think owners... The part that they're not saying is, look, we have to have 10 home dates in our home stadiums. That's the way we keep the lights on. That's how we have to do it. It's only 10 home. We have minimum of 10 home dates at our stadium. That's what we need to just break even. That's how stadiums are built. It's like one of the great misconceptions about, well, should there be public financing? Like, oh, there shouldn't be public financing. Owners, they do. They will make a ton of money. If they lay out all the money on the stadium, they're also going to want to have all the land or have all the tax benefits, unless, of course, cities want to make that money and cities benefit greatly from it. This is the big, great misconception with San Diego. I love San Diego. San Diego should have a new downtown, beautiful stadium just like Petco. Petco's incredible. Imagine if there was a sister stadium or a Big Brother stadium sitting somewhere next to it, where they had a football stadium. Every event would want to be there. And the idea that a pro sports franchise is supposed to shell out a bunch of money when they only use it 10 times a year. Think about that for a second. You want to spend $1 billion on something you're going to use 10 times a year? Wow, that's a luxury purchase. So all of this stuff is negotiation. The 18-game schedule isn't going to come to fruition if it ever happens until 2020s. And the truth is, it's probably never going to happen because he can give us all the data he wants about the high number of concussions that occur in the preseason. But the only thing you got to think about, how many quarterbacks, how many important players were hurt last year in the NFC? And we're only talking about a 16-game schedule. common logic tells you that two more regular season games, which gives you a higher likelihood of injury to important players, and you can fill out the rest of the roster with offensive linemen and defensive linemen for the war of attrition, but there just aren't that many good quarterbacks. There just aren't that many good running backs. There just aren't that many good wide receivers, period. So begin the negotiations with your wife or significant other today. Don't start Saturday because you're going to get shut down. Because by Saturday, her plans for Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening are made. No. Listen, I've been planning all week. We're going over to the Smith's house. They're having people over. It's little Jenny's birthday. You're going to come, and if the game is on, the game is on. Right? There's nothing worse than you're like, oh, my God, we're going to the one house that doesn't like football. Right? Or they hate Notre Dame so much they will not watch the Notre Dame game. When you walk into a house, and I've done this before, you were just like, hey, you mind if I put the game on? And they say, what game? You're the wrong house.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in Willie Taggart, the new head coach at Florida State. First, Coach, happy birthday, one day belated.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, buddy.
Does it feel like home yet?
Yeah, because I'm familiar. I would say from that standpoint, but and it feels like home because I'm not planning on going anywhere else.
No, I understand that, but I did notice the pause. Like it takes a little bit of time to where, you know, you can drive the roads of Tallahassee, or when you're at Tampa, or when you're at Western. I'm sure you go to Bowling Green, Kentucky. I could blindfold you. You could find your way to the stadium, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can. I think it's very similar here in Tallahassee too. It's not a big city. You know, it's pretty small, and you can get to a lot of places. I tell you one thing about Tallahassee now. There's so many lights, so it's about a mile away, but it'll take you about 10 minutes to get there with all the lights.
Well, I just tell you this. Listen, you beat Clemson, you win the ACC. You pull a local sheriff aside and said, hey, listen, could we get it where at like 6:30 a.m. I get a straight shot? I guarantee those lights would you. All you got to do is win a Sugar Bowl, win a big bowl game, and I guarantee that'll happen. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're right, buddy.
Willie Taggart joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Take me through the decision to start DeAndre Francois in the opener. Last year, of course, we saw him suffer through a tragic knee injury because he's such an electric talent. How close was the call for you?
It was close. I mean, we had a really good battle throughout training camp. Those guys were really working hard. But I think when we looked at the overall work and just when those guys are in there with 11 on 11 and just watching how the offense flows and watching guys that make the least mistakes, DeAndre was that guy. And we felt like he was the best one for us going forward.
As a quarterback yourself, what have the conversations been like in terms of how much you're going to put him in harm's way where he hasn't seen live contact? You know, he hasn't seen those live bullets since suffering the knee injury.
Well, we just talk about being smart and always know where the good and the bad things are. You know, the things that can hurt what we're doing offensively, or things that can get you in those situations. You know, we don't talk a lot about. I tell him about sliding. He got to learn and know how to slide. I think that's important playing the quarterback position. But I think when it comes to injury, it's hard to avoid a lot of those things. You're just playing ball. You just try to be smart with the football and understand your job is to make it back to the line of scrimmage.
You know,
as a quarterback.
We've only, like, look, in my lifetime, there's only been two head coaches at Florida State, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're used to Florida State looking a certain way. Of course, they were the ones who really brought, you know, was a fast break on turf back when Charlie Ward was there, right?
Yeah,
so they were, like, everybody credits different people for the spread and for tempo, but Florida State really kind of brought that into mainstream football. I guess my question is, how's a Willie Taggart coached Florida State team going to look in comparisons to Jimbo's or previous Florida State teams?
I think, again, you won't see us huddle. You know, you've seen Florida State in the past, they huddle. You won't see us huddling. You see us dictate the tempo that we want to play with. I think you'll probably see some of the same plays. I think when you look around college football, everybody's running the same plays. We just kind of get to it differently. So you'll see us doing those things differently, and then some formations that you probably hadn't seen as much. You'll see those as well.
I don't want to disrespect it in any way, your alma mater, Western Kentucky, which at their level has been a tremendous program. You turn that thing around. Nor do I want to do it to South Florida. They've had success. Or Oregon, of course, has played for national championship. But Florida State is part of college football royalty. And be remiss if you didn't mention, like, look, you're the first African-American permanent head coach in the history of Florida State football. Any sense of what that's going to feel like when you walk on the field with that FSU emblazoned on your chest as the head coach at Florida State on Saturday?
It's going to be fun. It's a place where I always wanted to be, and you finally get to that spot, and now it's go time. It's competitive time, and I know there's going to be a lot of energy. Everyone is excited, and I'll be excited, but I think once you run out of the tunnel, you get to the sideline, then it's kind of back to normal. It's just playing ball and coaching and locking into the game plan and what you got to get accomplished. I think it's been the first African-American coach here. I know for me personally, it was that way everywhere I've been, whether it's Western, South Florida, or Oregon. So that doesn't do anything really other than, you know, just trying to be the best coach you can be and go out there and try to win a ball game.
Virginia Tech, Florida State, we're the same age, so I'm sure we took it the same way. When I think of those two teams matching up, I think of Mike Vick, seemingly a one-man show, Beamer ball, playing against Florida State. Isn't that what you think of?
Oh, yeah. It was a big-time ball game. I know the first half there, Michael Vick was unstoppable, and it was good to see old Peter Warrick come and save the day for us there in the second half.
So are you going to be conducting interviews while the game's going on like Coach Bowden used to?
No, I don't think I'll be doing that.
how does having such – it's not just a Virginia Tech game out of the chute. It's a conference game for your first game. How does that change your approach here in the fall in prepping? Like, there's no – like, you don't play Northern or Samford. You don't play those kind of lead-up games where you could play the young guys and you could try some things and hide some things. How does it change your prep for this game?
Well, I think the thing we do more now is stress the fact that it is a conference game. You know, it's still a first-game opponent, and there's some things – there's some unknowns out there, you know, but – for us, we just got to go out and try to execute our offense, defense, and special team the best of our abilities and play a good sound football and not lose a game. And again, it's a conference game, and we stress it more unlike other games when it's out of conference. But this is big. This is part of our goals and things we want to get accomplished this year. And there's no warm up. You know, you start off in the fire with a team that could possibly be playing in a conference championship game as well.
No question. I mean, and your schedule, Vatek at home, Clemson at home, but you go to places like Louisville, to Miami, to Notre Dame, and then, of course, you end the season against in-state rival Florida. Like, that is right into the fire. There's no softies on this schedule. Okay, so I read the CBSSports.com unnamed coaches article, and you garnered the highest percentage of votes for coaches, overrated coaches. I'm sure you've read it and been asked about it. I just wondered, what's your response? How you took that when you read that article?
I didn't read the article, but I was told that I was voted as overrated coach by some of my peers, and I laughed because I'm sure some of those peers I don't even know, I don't talk to, and if I listened to any people like that, I wouldn't be in this position that I'm in.
Stan Wilcox is going to leave and go to the NCAA. He's the man who hired you. Florida State Athletic Director. He's going to work for the NCAA. What's the feeling like when a guy who had enough faith in you to bring you home, to give you a chance to run this program, then comes in and says, hey, I just want you to know, I'm going to take a job with the NCAA?
I mean, he's doing what's best for him and his family, and Stan did a great job while he was here. And again, I'm in debt to Stan for bringing me here and to be the head football coach here. And I know he'll do a good job at NCAA as well. I will tell you this, Doug, just me and my young head coaching experience, I've kind of experienced some of everything. I've experienced this at two of the jobs I've been at, you know, Western Kentucky and South Florida. So I will say my trip here kind of really helped me with all these different experiences.
No question. Everything along the way prepares you for the moment that you are today. Last thing, everybody's going to talk about DeAndre and the offense. The truth is that when Florida State's really good, you got dudes flying around out there on defense. But, of course, you know, offensive styles have changed. Give me the sense of what you were left with, what you've been able to add in to this Noel defense.
Well, we have some talent. You know, we're young. We're really young on the defense side of the ball. And really, as a football team, we have a young football team. But I know up front, I think we have some really good depth. Really, really happy with our D-line. Secondary, we have depth. And then at linebacker, we're just inexperienced. We have some guys there just inexperienced, and the only way you can get it is by getting in the fire and going. But like you said, when we're really good is when we have a good defense, and I think being simple and allowing these guys just to play football will help.
Can't wait to see the Noles on Labor Day at night. Doak Walker, you on the sideline against Virginia Tech. Wish you the best of luck, Coach. Thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on, Doug. Hey, have a great day if you want to.
Happy birthday again.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
Willie Taggart joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Jordan Palmer trained some of the top quarterbacks in the country at the QB Summit. At QB Summit on Instagram or at Jordan Palmer. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. He's going to join us in a moment. Quarterback is the premier position in football. It's becoming increasingly important because you can't lay a hand on the quarterbacks. And now that we're seeing younger quarterbacks early, I'm wondering if it's a good thing or a bad thing to see some of these guys play right away. Seems like Darnold's going to start right away. Seems like that's the plan. Jordan, you think Sam is, it's not necessarily that he's ready to start. Does he have a team around him that can protect him and allow him to really learn instead of running for his life?
Well, you know, I think that the college game and the NFL game is different enough where it's getting to the point where it's almost a different sport from college quarterback to NFL quarterback. So, I don't think any college kid coming out is just jumps in ready to play, but it's can they find success at an early age. The reason I say it's a different sport is largely because of the communication flow. So in college, if you think about it, like this weekend, watch college football games. You'll see all 11 guys on offense look to the sideline. There'll be a big card holding up with funny pictures on it. And then everyone will kind of look at the card, get the play, and then the quarterback will clap from gun. They'll receive the ball, and they'll go. But in the NFL, you're getting it through the headset. You're repeating that information. You're hearing a long play call. You're repeating that long play call. One of these guys breaks the huddle. Is like, wait, what is it? The guy explains it to him. Then you got to decipher the defense. So the communication is so much more comprehensive in the NFL than it is in college, which is, that's the ultimate game. It's not can they catch up to the speed of the game or is their arm strong enough. It's can they actually receive and then disseminate that level of information in a timely manner.
Okay, so let me get back to Sam Darnold. Everyone seems to be blown away by his ability to process all that information like a computer and then put it into play on the field, considering he wasn't doing that last year and he hasn't. Not like he's been a starting quarterback all that long, right? Like, he didn't play quarterback the whole time when he was in high school, and he only started for a year and three quarters at USC. But let's go back. His offensive line stinks. His wide receiving corps is average. Tight end position, probably bottom five in the NFL. Running back, same thing. Like, do you feel comfortable with Sam Darnold going out there, taking a beating, and learning on the job, considering his supporting cast?
Well, I mean, I think I'm confident in what Sam brings to the table physically. And what we've seen a pattern here of the rookies that play well their rookie year, a lot of it is tied to their ability to extend the play. And that may be because it didn't hit them right, or they didn't read it quick enough, or they didn't get their eyes to the right place at the right time. And so they have to extend the play, or the receivers can't get open, their running back misses protection, or their old line can't block. And it's really a combination of the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a quarterback's ability to extend the play, and that does not mean running a 4-3 and getting the edge and diving for a first down. I mean, Tom Brady extends the play by shuffling to the right one step at the perfect time. So the rookies that are playing well, they are extending the play, and it's giving them an opportunity to continue to make decisions and get the ball out of their hands and deliver it accurately. So Sam's game naturally translates to that. Just like I worked with Deshaun Watson the year before, and his game naturally translated to what he did put on the field in Houston. I watched the tape with Deshaun. He didn't read every play right. He didn't know the offense as well as Bill O'Brien, but he made it happen, and a lot of it was extending the play. So I think I don't disagree with your assessment of the Jets, and it's too early. I don't agree either, but I do have a lot of confidence in Sam's ability to extend the play and find a positive outcome at the end of every play.
Okay, so let's go to Deshaun Watson. You mentioned his ability to extend the play, but now he's suffered two ACL injuries. How much should that change his approach?
Zero. Absolutely none. He changed. He bruised me out of freshman year of college. Played the exact same way, and was asked to do a lot more physically. I mean, he was getting carries in college. He wasn't running the ball. He was getting carries. I don't think it changes a thing. The way he plays, he's going to continue to get smarter on when to get down and when to throw it away, just because quarterbacks do. I have a belief that quarterbacks get really good at the things that they have to do to survive. And with Peyton Manning at the end of his career, that was being unbelievable pre-snap, because at the end he couldn't throw it that great and he couldn't move that great, so he had to get his team in the perfect play every snap. Mm-hmm. And with Deshaun last year, it was moving around, buying time, making it happen. His O-line struggled. Named the tight end for the Houston Texans. He had star power other places, but it was the same thing. It was buying time, extending the play. And I think that part's not going to change. He'll just continue to get smarter and more mature in his game as it pertains to when, how to protect himself. But I don't think it changes anything. I think Deshaun just takes a storm this year.
Am I crazy? I said on TV, this is like 2 weeks ago, I was like, look, I think he can change kind of the quarterback position because of his ability to use what some have deemed a college offense or high school offense, be successful with it, come back from a knee injury. He's got an incredible leadership quality. Ask anybody who's been around him. He learns as he goes. He continues to learn, continues to evolve as a player. I'm buying the stock of Deshaun Watson even after the injury. Am I crazy to do so?
No, you know, if you were like had blindfolded me last season and you didn't tell me how he did on the field, I would have the same answer. I didn't say this publicly. Dave O'Sweeney didn't say it, but I definitely said it to a couple of teams. Dave O'Sweeney's right. This kid's Michael Jordan. I know how like bold that is and all that stuff. I'm just saying people don't think the way Deshaun thinks. When he plays Alabama back to back years, that's not adversity to him. Adversity is how he grew up. Adversity was the first 17 years of his life. So when he plays at Bama, or last year at Seattle, he goes off. At New England, second start, goes off. His defense lost both those games for them. They allowed the opposing quarterback to drive down and score a touchdown in the 2 minute drive. Otherwise, he's 2-0 in those two games. The way he thinks, the way he processes information, what I had said all along during the draft process is, as good of a college player he is, he's going to be a significantly better pro. And the reason is not because he has an elite arm or he's enormous or he's super fast. He's not. His physical comp is Alex Smith. He's the same size, similar arm talent. They both ran high 4.6, low 4.7. Like, that's his comp. But mentally, he thinks about the world differently. He genuinely believes he's the greatest athlete on the planet, but he's so humble and likable and smiles so much that a lot of people don't pick up on that killer instinct until they get in the huddle with him. And then the part that I got exposure to, and the reason I say he's going to be a better pro than college player, is because he is one of the smartest players I've ever worked with. He was on honor roll in third grade all the way through Dean's List at Clemson, and he graduated in less than 3 years, and he did all the work himself. So he's actually off the charts intelligent. And in college, you know, at Clemson, their plays, some of them were really, really simple. You know, F mode or red, right, boomer, just a couple of words. But in Bill O'Brien's offense, it's super comprehensive. So the reason I say he's a better pro than college player is because he has more resources. Mm-hmm. Now Bill can give him two plays, run, pass, check with me, away from rotation, run the ball to the shade. Like, he has more options and more resources. And I think he ain't going to peak for 3 or 4 years. And I think in the meantime, he's going to ball.
Jordan Palmer joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Baker Mayfield struggled as of late, looked good early. I don't know. To me, I talked to all these NFL people, and they're like, look, he processes it super fast. He is a good leader. He's just little, not a great athlete, and his arm has some pop, but it's not like he's Russell Wilson back there. What are your thoughts on what we've seen from Baker so far?
You know, I think Baker's a hard one to gauge, but I'm under the impression with quarterbacks in general that confidence is the most important trait in a quarterback, because it's actually the root of everything. Everything can get boiled down to, are you confident enough in your ability to do that or not? And because of where Baker is from a confidence standpoint, and I think there's two types of confidence. There's self-generated confidence and there's reactionary confidence. Reactionary confidence is, you believe everything that everybody says about you. If everyone says you're awesome, you think you're awesome. If everybody thinks you're a bum, you doubt yourself. Self-generated confidence is the type of confidence where it doesn't even matter what anybody says about you. You believe certain things about yourself. Baker is off the charts on self-generated confidence. And I am only saying this in a positive light. This is an amazing thing. If I had a drill for this, I'd make every kid do it. Because of where he's at on that spectrum, his arm is better than everybody thinks. He's athletic enough to extend the play. But because his confidence is where he is, I find it really hard to bet against him. I think the situation's interesting. You know, he's at the beginning of his career. I talked about this with Colin Cowherd last week. His coaching staff, a lot of them are on a one-year deal. So, you know, theoretically or realistically. So there's a lot of interesting aspects of what's happening in Cleveland right now that may work for or against him. But the reality is he's such a unique character in terms of the confidence that he plays with, how he shows up on game day. He's just a guy that I'm just not going to bet against. And my bet is that he figures it out and he surprises everybody just like he did at Texas Tech and Oklahoma. I mean, again, this kid was a walk-on twice,
yep.
Heisman finalist three times.
No,
I don't know that we'll see it again.
It's really, really remarkable. Jordan Palmer joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio at QB Summit. You can follow them on Instagram or at Jordan Palmer as well. I want to ask you about a couple of the college kids because this is a purely college weekend. Let's start with a guy that everyone in the SEC knows a little bit about. I think people nationally are going to learn about. Give me your sense for your expectations on Drew Lock.
You know, Drew is one of those guys who's just flown under the radar. Most people, people are football fans. They wouldn't know who he is. But I'm going to get this wrong, so somebody check this. But I think he broke an SEC record for yards last year. He's done some things that are upper echelon and record-breaking. If he stays healthy all these games, he'll have more starts than any SEC quarterback. There's a couple of these little things where you go, man, that's interesting, but he plays in Missouri. I'm excited to watch him have big moments against big teams. I don't know what the team's going to look like this year. I don't know a ton about Missouri and defense and the program and all that stuff. But in terms of individual talent, you know, Drew and among two or three other guys are the standard this year in the SEC. And if I'm a Bama, an Auburn, any of those fans, I'm certainly concerned with playing Missouri because they do have a quarterback who can score as many points as possible. And confidence-wise, is going to feel like the best player on the field and is going to play accordingly. And I'm fired up for Drew's name to kind of catch fire and to watch everybody jump on this bandwagon.
All right, you mentioned Auburn and how they should feel. They got Jared Stidham, who, of course, transferred in from Baylor. They open up this weekend with Washington. Huge game for UW and kind of the entire Pac-12 and their legitimacy on the line. Stidham had some moments last year, but then he had some moments of just being okay. What are your thoughts on what we expect from him this season?
Well, I'm excited for Jared because, you know, with Kerryon Johnson, their running back last year leaving, and he accounted for a lot of touches for them,
mm-hmm.
made up a lot of their offense. It's putting, you know, Gus Mel's on. All he wants to do is run the football every single play, run it twice on the play if he could. You know, he's in a position now with Kerryon leaving, Jared taking on a leader, you know, more of the leadership role and owning the offense. Got some really talented receivers, but they're going to have to throw it more. The Auburn Tigers allowing Jarrett to control more of the offense is a really good thing. He's really talented, really good understanding of the game. He's played in two different systems. Chip Lindsey, that offensive coordinator, very cerebral, great decision maker. So I'm excited to watch Auburn shift from run heavy to hopefully putting more on Jarrett because he's certainly capable of being the best quarterback in the country. And the top pick in next year's draft, I'd say Drew's right there. Both those guys are the conversation will be about those two guys.
All right, last one is JT Daniels. And look, your brother obviously starred there, and he kind of reinvigorated, you know, the luster of the quarterback position. But we've seen Orange County kids like Todd Marinovich. Say what you want about what happened with drugs and alcohol after USC, and maybe sometimes during USC. But that was with the Raiders. He was a spectacular talent with SC. We've seen Mark Sanchez. We've seen Matt Barkley. We've seen Matt Leinart. JT Daniels could be in high school as a senior. Instead, he's the starting quarterback at USC. Who of those all-timers at SC is he like?
None of them. And I'm really trying to control expectations. I've turned down a lot of interviews about JT. I do not want to create expectations. I definitely feel he's on a different trajectory than anybody I've ever been around. I started working with him in seventh grade, and I don't really work with seventh graders. I noticed some unique traits very early on. None of them were physical, all mental, the way that he thinks about the game, the commitment that he has to the game. And he has a giant head start. He has been around a lot of the best quarterbacks in the world. So, perfect example, last year he won Gatorade Player of the Year, and Deshaun Watson, through a video conference, presented him the award. It's a Gatorade appearance for Deshaun. It's a normal thing. Any high school kid would think that is the coolest thing in the world. When that happened, he had thrown with Deshaun at my stuff 40 times. This guy has been exposed to so much good football for so many years, and he's just, for 18, he is just thinking about things the right way. So I've been around Carson and Sanchez and Barkley and all these guys and Leinart. JT is in a unique position where he actually, he has no ceiling and the floor is really high. So I'm not making predictions or anything, but I do have a feeling he's going to be one of the best players in the country this year.
All right, great stuff as always. Jordan, I can talk football with you all the time. Matter of fact, I need to shoot up to your office. It's literally 5 minutes from my house. In the coming weeks, I'll do so. I'll grab some. You tell me what kind of coffee. I'll grab it. We'll talk ball. In the meantime, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Jordan Palmer at QB Summit.